You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll hear from a state lawmaker about proposed changes to state forfeiture laws affecting how and when police can seize property from citizens.
First, if you think back to when you were a kid, you were probably told stories filled with magic, dragons, and adventure, or maybe going on that trek through the woods to get to grandmother's house and all the challenges, talking wolves, the frights along the way.
Looking back, those stories might seem like fun distractions and entertainment, maybe an escape from the real world. But our next guest says they might be more than that because children may actually learn more from fantastical tales than from realism.
Dina Weisberg joins us now. She's a senior fellow in the psychology department at the University of Pennsylvania, where she studies how imagination can affect learning. Dina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, what led you to tackle this issue of whether kids might learn as much, maybe even more, from a fantasy story as from a real life type story?
That result actually came as something of a surprise. The research that led to it was looking for a way to teach vocabulary words to kids in Head Start programs and other low-income preschools, trying to close the vocabulary gap that happens before kids reach kindergarten. And we wanted to use books as a way to engage the children in this new endeavor of word learning. And as part of the project, I thought it would be interesting to include an investigation of what kinds of books would do a better job of teaching these new words. So we had a set of books that were realistic and a set of books that were fantastical, and we read them to the kids. And overall, we were just looking to see whether this book reading technique would help them to learn the words at all. And then I additionally examined whether there would be a difference between these realistic books and the fantastical books. And it turned out, much to everyone's surprise, that the fantastical books were actually doing better, that our kids were learning the vocabulary words more deeply. They were able to report back more of the definitions of these new words that we were teaching from the fantastical stories. So that was the start of it. And then since then, I've tried to look more deeply into that that result, which was unexpected. And in a series of studies since then, which are still ongoing in my lab, we've found similar findings. We found, again, that under these circumstances, fantastical stories can teach better than the realistic ones. So I was surprised at first, but we've kept going down that road, and it's something that seems to keep happening.
So when we say fantastical stories, what are we talking about here? Kind of Harry Potter type things?
Yeah, it's in that vein. The ones that we used in the original study were books that had dragons and knights fighting dragons and were set in that kind of medieval fantasy world. In the work that I've done since then, we've narrowed down to using events in stories that violate ordinary causality, that violate what can usually happen in the course of events. So, for example, we have a hamster who can walk through the wall of its cage, or we have a flower that can talk, for instance. So those are the kinds of events that we're talking about. And we're trying to make these books, which we're writing in the lab, look similar to the stories that kids would be getting in their everyday lives. So they're not entirely completely off the wall. It's not that everything that's happening is completely unrealistic. They're more like in sort of a superhero genre, or Harry Potter is a good example there, where there's a lot of realism, but every once in a while something happens that just would not or could not happen in reality. And it seems to be those events that are important for kids learning.
And you write that a lot of the thinking on this topic would have led toward the idea that, no, the closer a reading is to a kid's actual experience, the more relevant it will seem to them, and so the better it's going to stick in their heads. It's going to seem, I'll understand that this word is useful if it's in a context that I might encounter in the real world. Your findings seem to run counter to that, though.
Exactly, and that's why it was really so unexpected the first time that this came up. Everything that we know from all the past research on learning and memory in children, in adolescents, in adults suggests that realism would be best for learning. You want to be able to take what you have in the book, and then you need to be able to apply that to a real world situation. And similarity is key for being able to do that. You have to notice that the thing that's happening in the book, or the word that's being used in the book, or the principle that the book is trying to teach can then apply to reality. And it seems like a no-brainer, and nearly all of the past research confirms that if the book is more similar to reality, you'll be able to notice that what the book is telling you can then be applied straightforwardly to reality. And what we're finding right now is really turning that on its head. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not yet 100% sure why.
Well, what is your working theory about why? What are you thinking that you're trying to test to figure out the answer to that question?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do in the lab right now, is to figure out what's going on. One of the most reasonable theories that I have going at the moment is that it's about attention, that these books that have some of these events that are a little bit different from what you might find in your everyday life are much more interesting to children. They're more engaging. They're grabbing children's attention. And if you're paying more attention, you're going to be able to learn better. So in some sense, that's an easy way to explain away these results. And that's one thing that we're looking for. Another suggestion that I think is more interesting and is a little bit more controversial is that it's not merely attention, that it's a particular kind of attention. That when you're reading a fantastical story and you encounter one of these events that's contrary to the rules of reality, something about that event says, hey, wake up. What's going on here is not what you expect. You need to be bringing some serious processing resources to figuring out what's happening in this book. So it's not just about paying more attention. It's about paying more careful attention precisely to the question of, can this happen? Can that not happen? How is this like what I encounter in my everyday life? How is it different? And it's that specific kind of attention to the events that's leading to the better learning.
We're talking to psychology researcher Dina Weisberg from the University of Pennsylvania, looking at research on fantasy reading, how it might affect kids' learning. Her research, anyway, finds that they learn new vocabulary words better from that fantasy story, maybe than from a realistic reading. And Dina, on a wider note, you study the role of imagination and engaging the imagination in learning. Why is that important?
Yeah. It's important for a lot of different reasons, and I really love being able to study this because it's surprising to a lot of people to hear me say that imagination is a crucially important tool for some of the more serious cognitive abilities that we have, like learning and reasoning and memory. What the imagination allows us to do is to get out of our current reality, and we can do that when we get out of our current reality and go to the world of Harry Potter, or we go to Middle Earth or something more fantastical. But we also use that in science, for instance. We use that when we're trying to think about, well, what could happen here? What might be a possible explanation for that pattern of results? What would happen if I were to pursue this line of inquiry? The imagination is everywhere if we look for it. It lets us plan for the future to think about what might happen if I engage in these particular actions. It lets us think about the past in different ways. Well, what would have happened if the Allies had lost the Second World War, for instance? And being able to ask those questions, being able to use our imagination to think about reality, can then help us understand the structure of reality more deeply. So being able to think about what might have happened if the Allies lost World War II can lead us to understand a little bit better why they won and why that didn't happen.
Do you think there might be something in there about what's going on in the brain with storytelling, the way we just want to know what happens next? And fantasy stories seem to do that, at least especially well. They engage sometimes in ways that more realistic things might not. I want to read the book about the hamster that walks through the wall. It sounds interesting.
Well, that particular book, I have to admit, is not super interesting because we created it in the lab to work with the children that we recruit for our studies. And so everything is very carefully controlled. But your point is definitely well taken, that there's something that seems really engaging about these studies, and we just want to know what happens next. We always ask kids questions to find out how much they remember about the different stories, to see if they're paying more attention. Do they remember more when there's more fantasy events going on, which would tell us something about whether or not they, like us, really want to find out what had happened in that story and are really engaging with those a little bit more.
Dina Weisberg is with us right now. She's a senior fellow in the psychology department at the University of Pennsylvania, where she studies the role that imagination plays in learning. And we're talking to her now about why children may learn more from fantasy stories than they do from realistic writing.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. As a child or as your parent, as a parent, are fantasy stories, fantasy books, part of your in-house curriculum? Did you learn everything you needed to know from Harry Potter or The Lord of the Rings or The Chronicles of Narnia, you name it? Do you think we can get a lot of things out of fantasy or fantastic literature, stories, fairy tales, you name it, as much as maybe for more realistic writing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're continuing our conversation about the importance that fairy tales and fantasy can play in how children learn. Dina Weisberg is with us. She's a senior fellow in the psychology department at the University of Pennsylvania.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent or a teacher, do you read fantastical stories to your children, to your students? What have you seen in your old children or in your own upbringing? What did you read? What was read to you as a kid? Do you feel like, yeah, you learned something about thinking or maybe even just vocabulary from fantasy type stories? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first call now. We've got Scott with us in Iowa. Scott, hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
I don't got a lot of time. I'm on the road, but I listened to you talk, and I think that's common sense, what you're saying. I don't know why someone would think different.
What is it about it that you think is common sense? Do you think that these stories are just better, and so we're going to learn more?
Well, what holds your interest is what I was thinking. I mean, if you had a chance to read a fictional book or the daily newspaper, which is usually old news by the time you get it either way, what are you going to remember? I mean, the book's going to bring you back. The paper's done the minute you put it down, basically.
Right. Scott, good point. Thanks for bringing that up, and I appreciate that call. And, Dina, what about that? Whatever holds your interest is what you're going to absorb. And books, especially these fantasy stories, they do have this compelling narrative thread. And if we want to find out what happens next, we have to figure out what some of these words mean.
Yeah, I really appreciate Scott's point there, because definitely the things that hold your interest are the things that are going to be learned from more easily. The interesting thing comes in when you look at the contrast between a fantasy story, so like a fictional fantasy story, and as opposed to a fictional reality story. So these are both things that have narratives and that could hold your interest more than, say, a newspaper column, which is definitely going to be much drier compared to the novel and then the fantasy story. And there's something of a fight, because the realistic novel is going to be more similar to reality, so you might think you learned from it better. And the fantasy book might be more interesting, and so you might think you learned from that one better. And just looking at it that way, it's difficult to make a prediction about which way it's going to go. It might depend on what kind of person you are. Some people really hate fantasy and science fiction. I don't happen to be one of them. As a deep, lifelong nerd, I feel very vindicated by this kind of research. But some people really dislike those kinds of books, and fantasy might not work as well for them. We really need to pay attention to who is doing the reading as well as what they're reading.
Scott, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Amy in Dubuque. Amy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think this is a really exciting topic, and I love the idea of that research. It fits so clearly with the stuff that I've been doing for the past 15 years. I work with children in the summertime in a summer camp that is specifically fantasy literature-based summer camp. It started out as a Harry Potter camp, and and then it went in a lot of different ways, but it's always based on fantasy literature and fairy tales and King Arthur and that kind of thing. The thing that I think is so exciting is that not only, and I used to do a lot of literacy research as well, but not just the little bitty kids. And I think it's interesting how kids all the way up the scale are deeply involved in their learning. It's not a gifted and talented camp, but even in the sciences, to use the imagination as a springboard for studying science. You know, we had, for example, a whole unit at camp where the kids were studying DNA and how to do DNA, and they took their own DNA, and then part of the drama was that there was a werewolf among us, and so they had to research, you know, what would the DNA of a werewolf look like, and they still talk about it, and they know how to do it, they know the science behind it, and we've had, you know, math questions that are philosophically related to fairy tales and all that. I just think the imagination is so important in learning how to learn and how to think, as well as the emotional component. I think there's something there as well, and I'm wondering if in your research, the emotional component of imagination has come into play at all.
Amy, thank you so much for sharing that experience. Dina, what do you think?
Thanks, Amy. That sounds like a fantastic summer program. I've got a 4-year-old son. I think he would love to join you at that camp and find werewolves with you. So thank you so much for doing that. I think a lot of educators are often afraid to use fantasy, particularly for kids at the younger ages. They get very worried that children won't be able to tell the difference between real and what's fantasy, and that they'll end up believing that there are really werewolves or having other sorts of detrimental effects on their education. So I wish more people would do what you're doing and take advantage of the fact that kids find these processes so interesting, and that educators can leverage that to get across some of these more serious scientific topics. I think that's great. With respect to the question you asked about emotions, I think that's also a really important piece of the puzzle. It's not something that I've looked at directly so far. We've been trying to teach more mundane facts, biological principles, definitions of new words, things like that. They're a lot easier to control and to test in the lab. But there certainly is a place in fantasy for being able to exercise your emotions and being able to try on these different roles that can help you stretch and grow as a person. Certainly, there's a way to do that with realistic fiction as well, but I think fantasy gives you permission to go a little bit farther than you would otherwise, and it may be that it has these good effects on emotional development as well. We'll have to wait and see what the future research brings there.
Amy, thank you so much for sharing that. And we're going to go next to Pedro in Milwaukee. Pedro, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to share?
I was calling because I am a person with dyslexia, and when I was a child, I had a very difficult time learning how to read. My mom noticed that I had an interest in comic books, so she started to actually help me collect comic books, which in turn actually helped me learn how to read. I was wondering, this question actually just came to me, I was wondering, has there been studies about fantasy or comic books or something of that nature helping people with learning disabilities?
Pedro, thanks for that. And Dina, do you know anything about that? Comic books and the role of learning and maybe with dyslexia?
Yeah, you're making a great point there. I don't know of any research off the top of my head specifically about comic books and dyslexia, but I think it ties into the rest of the conversation that we've been having, that if you can find that thing that you're passionate about and you're really going to work to understand it, and if that thing happens to be comic books that have this fantastical element, then I think it's all to the better. I think that you really have to work with the kids and meet them where they are as far as their interests are concerned, and that will draw them into the learning process.
Pedro, thanks a lot for sharing your experience talking to Dina Weisberg from the University of Pennsylvania about fantasy and learning. And we'll go next to Tom with us in Toma. Tom, hi.
How you doing?
Great. What did you want to bring up, Tom?
Thanks for taking my call, and kudos to the lifelong nerd. I grew up when, you know, Star Wars became on the big screen, and I was about 10 years old, and those movies were just something that inspired me to pursue the science. And through my college career, you know, I still find myself in the toy aisle at the age of 40 because those movies really pushed me toward the science background and a science degree and being more innovative in the classroom, you know.
Tom, thank you so much for sharing that. And Dina, we hear that Star Wars and Star Trek, for that matter, motivating people to pursue studies and even careers in science.
Yeah, I hear that from a lot of people when I discuss that work. And I think it's great that we can finally start taking that seriously, that these kinds of fantastical situations can have these amazing real life effects. A lot of folks have told me that Star Wars or Star Trek or Narnia or Lord of the Rings were such an important motivating force in what they're now doing with their lives. And so if science fiction can spark science fact, I think that's fantastic. Remember that a lot of the inventions that we have around us today were initially fantasy. So I have a little device in my purse that I can use to communicate with people across the globe, or that I can use to send them pictures, or that I can use to look up just about any fact that's ever been discovered. And that was fantasy at a certain point. And somebody thought, well, what would happen if we tried to make that real? So I think we owe a lot of our modern technology and devices, and to a certain extent, a lot of the scientific advances that have been made, were something that at one point someone had to just dream up.
Dina, briefly, as we wrap up, can we adults benefit from imaginative thinking in our day-to-day learning lives?
Sure. I think adults are fundamentally not that much different from children in many, many ways. And I think this is one of them, that if it's something that sparks your interest, if it's something that can hold your attention, and if fantasy is the thing that does that and helps you learn, then absolutely.
Dina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
That's Dina Weisberg, a senior fellow in the psychology department at the University of Pennsylvania, where she studies the role that imagination can play in learning. She joined us today to talk about how stories of fantasy may be able to help children learn maybe more than stories based in reality. Still time for you to share your thoughts, your experiences, learning, or teaching, for that matter, students or kids. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page. You can find out more about Dina's research while you're there, and let us know, was there a fantasy story, a fairy tale, a book, maybe Harry Potter, that really got you or your kid learning?